Shrink Wrap Radio. All the psychology you need to know, and just enough to make you dangerous.
Shrink Wrap Radio number 215. Archetypal Work with Inner City Youth with Kwame Scruggs. Welcome to Shrink Wrap Radio, the planet's premier psychology podcast. This is your host, Dr. Dave, coming to you from the San Francisco Bay Area. Shrink Wrap Radio is the show that speaks from the psychologist in me to the psychologist in you, whether you be amateur, student, or professional.
First things we do with the boys is we apologize to the boys for our generation leaving them on their own, okay? And I mean, it's a sincere apology to them. Like for the boys we work with, I say 80% of them don't have the fathers in the homes. So one of the first things we do is apologize, and then we tell them this one myth, the beginning of the myth, and it's called The King and the Corpse. And in this myth, there's this mendicant, which is a holy man. In this particular myth, he's a beggar, but he's really a holy man. And he goes to the king's treasure, and every day for 10 years, he gives this king's treasure a piece of fruit. Now when I'm telling the story, you know, you got the beat of the drum going. And he does this every day. And the king's treasure just casually tosses the fruit aside, but this does not discourage the mendicant. And he just, you know, calmly walks back into the crowd and returns home. And then he comes back the next day, hands the king's treasure a piece of fruit. And this goes on every day for 10 years.
That was the voice of my guest, Dr. Kwame Scruggs, speaking about his Jungian approach to working with at-risk African-American youth in Akron, Ohio. And if you want to hear the rest of that story, you should definitely listen on. Kwame Scruggs, Ph.D., is the founder and executive director of Alchemy Incorporated, a tax-exempt nonprofit organization based in Akron, Ohio, that he established in 2003 to assist urban male youth in developing a sense of personal purpose in life while utilizing strategies to successfully function as members of a family, school, community, and the world at large. He came up with the idea to create Alchemy several years ago when he was working as a counselor with high school dropouts. After telling a story to the young men, he was asked to tell another story. He realized that he had found a way for them to connect the messages and characters of the stories he told with the people and issues within their own lives. From that moment, Kwame began his own journey of self-fulfillment, learning, and confirmation of his professional aspirations. Under his leadership, Alchemy was founded, and today it's a nationally recognized program that combines mythological traditions, drumming, academic support, cultural enrichment, and the guidance of a team of highly accomplished and caring male mentors to encourage and equip middle and high school adolescent males in developing their full potential, service to others, and finding their place in life. Alchemy's name is derived from the ancient art of chemical transformation, in which medieval alchemists attempted to transform a lower base metal or prima materia into gold, called the Philosopher's Stone. Alchemy works to transform prima materia of the urban male youth into the Philosopher's Stone, that is the gold inherent within those youth. Kwame became interested in studying and using mythology to connect with youth after being initiated into the Akan system of life cycle development, which is an African-based rite of passage system. And reading the works of Carl Jung, whose work addressed the concept of the collective unconscious, Jung's work led Kwame on a reading journey that included the works of Joseph Campbell and Michael Mead. These and other readings confirmed his desire to pursue the use of myth in his work with youth. It also strengthened his educational aspirations. Kwame now holds a Ph.D. and M.A. degree in mythological studies with an emphasis in depth psychology from Pacifica Graduate Institute. In addition, he holds an M.S. degree in technical education with emphasis in guidance and counseling from the University of Akron. Now here's the interview. Dr. Kwame Scruggs, welcome to Shrink Wrap Radio.
Thank you very much, Dr. Dave. I feel humbled that you asked me to be a part.
Well, I'm so pleased to have the opportunity to speak with you. I heard from one of my listeners, Laura, who's a doctoral student in the Collaborative Counseling Doctoral Program at the University of Akron, and she suggested that you'd make a terrific guest. I think this was on the heels of my interviews with Dr. Dana Hauk, a Jungian therapist who used myth and storytelling in his work with hardcore cons. And I think she saw a certain similarity in your work that you've drawn on Jungian ideas in your work with inner city youth there in Akron, Ohio. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct. I had opportunity to listen to that interview that you did, and basically a lot of our work seems to parallel where I pretty much got my idea from, although it is definitely Jungian based, was from the work of Michael Mead. With I'd read his book Men in the Water of Life, and he told seven different mythological stories. He told the stories and then gave interpretations of the stories, and then it was from there that I got the idea to start using myth with urban males.
Well, that's great. We'll go more into that background and maybe a little bit more into Michael Mead as well. But before we start talking about the program that you've created, let's talk some more about you. I know you're into stories, so tell us the story of Kwame Scruggs.
Yeah.
Okay. Where did you grow up, et cetera?
Okay, I grew up in Akron, Ohio. I was born in 1958, and Akron is a rubble capital of the world. And so, you know, it had the headquarters of Goodyear, Firestone, Goodrich.
Oh, yeah.
But when I was growing up, my earliest memories of childhood was sitting and watching the black and white TVs and seeing the blacks, well, we were colored back then, or Negroes, being beaten, you know, in the water hoses and,
yeah,
and the dogs. And as a child, I just didn't understand that.
I can imagine.
And everything that I saw on TV in relation to blacks was negative. We were clowns, butlers, slaves, nothing positive. So I internalized that as a child and just felt less than.
Yes.
And all based on the color of my skin. And so that was like my earliest wound, and when you look at myth, you find that pretty much is the wound that drives you. And so that's, you know, primarily how I ended up using myth to work with urban males. But back to who I am, I grew up all black neighborhood, went to all black grade school, lower middle class upbringing, but I remember, you know, feeling guilty because I had a baseball glove and a bat, and we drank out of glasses while my neighbors, you know, a few of my neighbors drinking out of mayonnaise jars and that sort of thing. Just, you know, I remember feeling guilty about that, and did okay in school, nothing earth shattering. Went to public grade schools, K through 6, then I went to like private schools and middle school, then I went to public high school. Then played basketball and did other things in high school that I probably shouldn't have done through high school. And then
that was part of your initiation, right?
Yes, yes. And started working. I was 16 years old. And
well, that's young.
Then when I was 17, worked two jobs in the summer, 12 hours a day. Worked 8 o'clock in the morning to 8 in the evening. And then worked every day after school when I was a senior, and then graduated from high school on a Thursday. My father had me working at Goodyear Tire and Rubber Company the following Monday. So I worked at Goodyear 15 years, and
wow.
I went to school in the evening. So it took me 15 years to get my degree.
Are you talking about your college degree now?
Yes, my bachelor's degree. It took me 15 years to get my bachelor's degree. And then Goodyear offered a separation letter. I took the separation letter and ended up getting a graduate assistantship from Dr. Fry. I didn't even know what graduate assistantship was, but I needed to get a job. I wanted to move to New York City with my sister, but then she moved back home and the recession hit. So I ended up taking the graduate assistantship, and I wanted to go get my degree in counseling, but after leaving Goodyear, I took like about a 70% cut in pay, so I ended up getting my degree, my master's in technical education with an emphasis in guidance and counseling. Then I ended up getting a job at University of Akron with Upward Bound program and worked there for like 5 years. But in the meantime, I had volunteered with this neighborhood program working with youth. And through that program, I got introduced to a rites of passage program, like an African-based rites of passage. And it was through that, the initiation and the whole bit, that I got introduced to the work of Carl Jung. And I started reading Jung, fell in love with Jung's work, and from Jung, I started to read Joseph Campbell. And then that's when I found out about Pacifica Graduate Institute. When I was like, I was about 38 years old, and I remember looking out my window at the University of Akron and saying, well, I'm going to be 40 here in a minute, and I don't really want to, you know, remain here. And at the time, I was reading Campbell's Power and Myth, and his one sentence said, follow your bliss. And he said, when you follow your bliss, doors open where you thought there'd be no doors. And I'm like, ask myself, wow, what is my bliss? What is it that I really want to do? Not what can I do, what do I really want to do? And I said, I want to play my drum and tell mythological stories.
Wow.
And, end up finding out about Pacifica Graduate Institute. So, I don't know, a couple years later, ended up going to Pacifica and did the master's in mythological studies with the emphasis in depth psychology. Then took a few years off and then started my nonprofit Alchemy Incorporated, and then ended up finishing the PhD at Pacifica Graduate Institute. So, that's a long story short there.
Well, I'm sure you left a lot out of important things, and that's quite a journey. And I think it's a very rare and unusual journey for an African American male. I'll bet you that. Did you meet any others at the Pacifica Graduate Institute?
No.
Yeah,
I was the only, and I was the only black in that in that program. And basically, what the students there, they come from all around the country, and our classes were like Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday once a month, and you pretty much go through with that same group for the 2 years or the three if you're doing the PhD. And that was one of the reasons why I left, was because it just brought up too many childhood memories for me of being the only black out there and feeling less than, because the school's in Santa Barbara, California.
Right, which is an affluent place.
Very,
very, very white affluent place.
And if you're looking around and you're seeing that, you know, wow, you're in a beautiful place like that, and then you don't see anybody who looks like you, then you're like, you know, it just kind of works on your psyche. And you're like, wow, what am I doing here? And it just brought up so many, you know, memories from childhood and just trying to be a spokesman for the entire black race. You know, I was just got to be a little too much for me, so I took a little leave of absence.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you speaking so frankly about that, and maybe we'll come back to some of those racial issues. You've already touched on a bunch of things that I was going to ask you about, like I was going to ask you, well, what was the wound that got you into this work, and you spontaneously went to that place.
Yeah, no doubt for me, and you know, we all have crosses to bear.
Yep.
And for me, that was, you know, personally, that was my wound, and I don't have any personal, real, you know, bad personal stories, but it was just more of a collective story of, you know, my ancestors. I always remember when I would go out to Pacifica, I would cry each trip. I'd cry like a little baby each trip.
Oh boy.
Remember one night, it was 4 o'clock in the morning, and I was crying uncontrollably, and I had a roommate, and I went to the bathroom and closed the door so I wouldn't wake him, and I'm sitting there and I'm crying for like about 20 minutes, non-stop, and then I'm just finally stopping. I said, you know, wait a minute, what am I crying about? Because I said, hell, my parents been married 50-some years, you know, I never really wanted for anything. And then I saw an image in a bathtub, and it was some water in the bathtub, and below the water was bones, and it was the bones of my ancestors. And at that moment, I realized, well, I'm not crying for me. My pain is more a collective pain for
Oh, that's fascinating. That reminds me of the story that Jung tells, I think, in Memories, Dreams, Reflections, about the dream that he had when he was on the ship with Freud, and Jung had a dream about bones in the basement, and Freud wanted to interpret that as hostility towards his parents, whereas Jung saw it really as being archetypal and about the ancestors, the collective. So that's an interesting vision. Did you already know that story when you had your vision?
At that time, I knew it, but it's interesting. I didn't think about it until you just mentioned it right now. But I was aware of his book.
Yeah,
and like that story, and I read that book twice. Love that book. Matter of fact, speaking of that, you know, we won't get too far off. But Deirdre Baer's book on Jung's bio is, wow, that's a nice follow-up to MDR.
You know, I don't know that book. What's the title?
It's Jung's Bio by Deirdre Baer. It's a nice, it's like a bio on Jung. It's about 400-600-something pages, about a couple hundred pages of notes. But, yeah, it's a book worth, in my opinion, worth reading.
Okay, well, I appreciate that recommendation. So what was it about the Jungian approach that spoke to you? Because something was speaking to you pretty deeply to make you kind of grit your teeth and keep going back to this place that was so painful for you to go to.
Like I say, when I was going through that African Bates rites of passage, it was a rites based on the Khan principles of people of West Ghana, and it was through that I was introduced to the work of Jung. So the gentleman who was doing our facilitating, he had the book Portable Jung. So I went out and bought Portable Jung, and what captured me, and this was my initial introduction to Jung, what captured me was Jung's, he had a chapter there on the phenomenology of self, where he talked about the ego, the shadow, the anima, the animus, the persona, the wise old man, the trickster, and I'm like, wow, you know, that really captured my attention there. But then also he had a chapter on synchronicity that captured my attention, and also the collective unconscious. So that's what pretty much got me into Jung's work, and then also the dreams. You know, just I started to write my dreams down.
Yes.
So that's what got me into the Jung, but it was more so the myth. It was more so the study of the myths, and the character traits of the hero, and the common themes in the myth that you know kept me sticking it out. That Pacific Unhell just keeps, you know, keep me sticking it out day to day.
Yeah. So I gather there was somebody maybe who was sort of a mentor for you, or there in Akron, whoever it was who was doing this this African mythologically based program.
The mentors for me, it ended up being books, and it was books.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and it was the reading of Malcolm X. That's what really got me started to reading, and I was about 30 some years old when I read that. My wife introduced me to that book, and I still remember her handing it to me in the hallway of our apartment. And what turned me on so much about Malcolm was that, after I read his autobiography, I'm like, wow, he's not the bad guy that I've been told that
yes.
he was as a child. Okay, because as a child, you know, everything I was told about Malcolm X was negative, and all the images were negative. So now I said, wow, if they lied to me about that, they've lied to me about other things.
Yeah.
And that's what got me started to reading. And then from that, I started to read about the psychology of black. So books ended up, for the most part, being my mentor. And then, like I said, it was Meade's, you know, Men in the Water of Life, which really just, which was really my mentor with that book there. And then after Meade's book came on the scene, and then I had the opportunity to meet Dr. David Whitaker out of Cleveland. So at that point, I had a tangible mentor in Dr. Whitaker. So I had Dr. Whitaker and then Michael Meade.
Yeah. Well, now is Dr. Whitaker white?
No, he's a black gentleman. He has his bachelor's degree out of Kent State. I think it's in mathematics. Then he ended up getting a master's in, I think, school psychology, but at the same time that he got his PhD in clinical counseling, he got a law degree. So he got his, PhD from Case Western University, his law degree from John Marshall, but he got him at the same time. And a very wise man. And I met him from going through the rites and through myth, I just understood the importance of a mentor. And,
yes.
And so I just started to try to hang around him as much as I could. And,
oh, that's great.
So we've been friends now. He's director of my board. He's on my board. We've been friends about 15 years now. And like with the myth, I study the myth, but also we use a lot of quotes, and they say that water picks up the sediments of the channel in which it travels. So I just try to surround myself with, people like Dr. Whitaker. They also say that you make your friends your teachers, and you mingle the friendly art of conversation with the advantages of instruction.
That's great. That's great. The reason why I asked about race in relation to Whitaker, and I guess it applies more with Michael Mead, I'm just wondering if it was a struggle for you to, the fact that there was this racial divide, if there was a struggle for you in accepting teaching from somebody like Michael and some of the other teachers that you encountered, even Carl Jung.
Okay, that's a good question. Here again, I use a lot of quotes and live by quite a few. But they say that you can have people of your color who are not of your kind, and people of your kind who are not of your color.
Oh, that's nice. I like that.
So you basically want to look at the message and not the messenger. So I never really, I don't want to say never, but for the most part, I don't let color get in the way.
Yeah. Yeah, good. Good. I hope you're passing that teaching along to...
Oh, no doubt.
Yeah.
no doubt. Like with my boys. I mean, Michael Mead, he's worked with... he's come here for like 3 years, our second 3 years when we started the program. We brought Michael here, to work with the boys. And I noticed, too, when I look at a lot of our pictures, I had Gerald McDermott, who was called medal winner, another white gentleman, studied under Campbell for like 13 years, and brought him here to work with the boys. Boys spent an entire day with Jody Wainer, president of the Jung Center in Cleveland. She's white, so no, we don't get off into that.
Yeah. Well, tell us about your program that you've created, and how you came to create it, and how it's structured.
Okay. When I was working at the University of Akron, I was counseling students, upper bound students, and it was like pulling teeth getting into talk, and then I came across Mead's book, with the myth, and I just said, wow, myth is the ticket to working with the youth to get them to talk. So then I started to run parent groups and my counseling groups using myth. And then when I left the University of Akron...
Let me just stop you there, because you've thrown out an interesting pearl there. Myth is the ticket for getting recalcitrant youth to talk. Somebody might want to know how to do that trick.
And that's one of the things we're in the process of doing right now is putting a teacher's manual.
Good.
And my dissertation was how to use myth with urban adolescent males. So we're also in the process of trying to get that put into a book form. But basically, it's not that difficult. You tell the story, and you have certain questions, that pertain to each story that deals with different developmental issues.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so that's how we do that, which later I can give you an example.
Okay, that sounds good.
That. But after I left the University of Akron, I started to work with a few gentlemen who had some contracts with charter schools, and I started to work with high school dropouts in Akron and Cleveland, doing my myth. Everything I do is playing the drum, telling a mythological story while I'm playing the drum, and then we ask the question, we have discussions afterwards. And so I was doing training for teachers at charter schools in Akron, Cleveland, Cincinnati, and then I was with them for about 2 years, and then I broke off on my own and created the nonprofit Alchemy Incorporated. And as you know, alchemy is ancient art of transformation, and we'll just use that as a metaphor to extract the gold that's inherent within our youth. And I just happened to be in the right place at the right time. I was at Perkins Middle School, and the John S. James L. Knight Foundation put about $5-6 million into this after school program for like 5 years or so, and I just happened to be there, and we ended up getting a nice 3-year grant from the Knight Foundation, and that's pretty much how, you know, it all started. Just being in the right place at the right time. I had a few other people who were just like angels sent from God, Vivian Neal and Carla Sibley. And they, you know, when you see our program and work, you know, in action, I mean, you see, you know, a group of black boys sitting in a circle, adolescent boys. You know, we start off with the drumming, then you tell the mythological stories, and then we'll stop at a certain point. And all the boys have journals, and they'll write down what resonates with them in the story. No right or wrong answers, and they just go around and they talk about some pretty deep issues that's going on in their life. So with our program right now, basically we have an in-school program where we go in school during the school day, and we also have an after-school program with middle school students. We have a summer component where we have like a 3-day overnight camp. Then we do some training for teachers. Last year we worked with like over 100 boys. Last year we were in about 4 schools. The next year we're slated to be in about 5 or 6 schools. But we have about 35 boys that we'll work with from to their seniors. Out of that 35, 17 of them we've had since 6th grade. They're going into 10th and 11th grade now. And out of that other 35, we have about 17 that we've had since 9th grade, and they're going into their 11th grade year now. So we'll have these students for like what's about 6 years
total. And how do boys get into the program?
Well, at Perkins, we pretty much just took whoever would come, and then that second year, once we, you know, saw that, wow, this is really working, we became a little more selective with teacher recommendations, counselor recommendations, did an interview. We had a summer program to see how many of them would take to the stories. That was for our second group of students. But now at Copley High School, where we have an in-school program, basically this is like, it's considered the suburbs, but it's not really. And they have an influx of urban youth coming in, and they were just concerned about these urban males. And they heard about our program, so they brought us in to work with the students, and they just chose the students that they were concerned about, some of the students they were concerned about. So that's how that group there was selected. Now, at one of our other schools, it's an alternative school for students that have been expelled from all the other Akron Public Schools, and they all come to this one school. And principal and assistant principal, they, you know, selected the students that they wanted us to work with. But from here on out, any other students that we might work with from 6th grade on, we need to be a little bit more selective, because we put this a lot of time, energy, and money in, you know, per student. And just need to see perhaps more of a return on our investment.
Well, speaking of investment, how are you able to support yourself? Is there grant money that pays you a salary? Or
grant money. And like I said, we were very fortunate in the beginning. We received a nice grant from Knight Foundation, Akron Community Foundation, City of Akron, GAR Foundation, the Cuts Foundation. But lately, with the economy, we've taken quite a hit. And a lot of my personal money right now is going into making this happen. But we're going to be okay.
Yeah, this is a tough time for nonprofit efforts like this. Maybe you can share some success stories with us, because I saw that you've had kids that have gone through the program and are now on your staff, right?
No, because we only been up since about 2004.
Okay, I guess okay. I misunderstood something on the website. I was looking at the different personal stories of people on the staff, and somehow I got that impression.
Now we have boys who have been in the program for about four years, and this is another component that we really want to fine-tune. It's like our mentoring component, to where the students who are going into the 10th and 11th grade, they come back and they assist boys in our program who are like in fifth grade, mm-hmm. sixth grade,
yeah.
But all through the mythological stories, we paid them $10 an hour to do that. It was like we had a one-week summer program, and then we also had a program during the school year which ran about 10 weeks. But we really want to fine-tune that, because that's a nice concept there with the youth.
It definitely is. Is there a story that stands out for you as kind of a success story that, you know, what keeps you going?
Wow. You know, we have some boys who are pretty sharp, but then we have some boys who are sharp who seem to be going down that wrong path. And to me, it's kind of early to say that we have success stories.
Okay.
The boys are still, like, you know, in high school.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny you would mention that, because I was just thinking today about one of the boys. We were talking about something. It was one of our group sessions. And in the myth, there's just one myth that we talk about a lot. It's called the Firebird. And in this myth, the king has a boy go out and catch this feather, and he catches the feather and he brings it back to the king. But the king tells him, well, if you can catch the feather, you can catch the whole bird, if not, off with your head. And then the boy brings back the whole bird, and after that the king, well, if you can bring me back this, you can bring me back something else. And it goes on and on and on, and it's just never enough. And I recall one of the boys saying that, I can't remember if this is his exact phrase, but he said that I would never be satisfied. But in the myth, the king pushes the boy past his limits because he recognizes the genius within the boy.
Yeah.
Okay. So, you know, I guess it's according to how you define success, but I just think it's a little early right now for us, you know, to say what is successful.
Mm-hmm.
Even though, you know, even with that said, when I look at some of the things that the boys have to deal with on a daily basis, hey, just getting up every day and going to school and being able to just get through that every day, I guess, is somewhat of a success. But like with our boys, one of the ways we evaluate used to be, you know, just the grades and behavior, and you see an increase, you know, in their grades and a decrease in their, you know, negative behavior. But primarily what we look for now is their ability just to develop and to just be able to make better decisions. So if I was to say a success, I would say more so based on the boys just making, you know, better decisions and not looking short term and trying to make the sacrifices,
mm-hmm.
for long term.
I would guess also that you might see success in terms of some development of their presence in the group.
Yes, that's a good point. A couple of weeks ago, we had our 3-day overnight camp, and we were doing evaluations, and one of our top boys, without question, one of our top boys, after he had just gotten into some pretty serious trouble. And we were talking to her. I was talking to him, just him and I sitting there. And he was just saying how he had a really good time during the camp. But he said next year he would try to be more of a leader because he knows that the boys will follow them, you know, follow him.
Yeah.
So yes, we definitely see it, you know, in their comments from the stories. And for me, it's a little difficult for me to see because I'm with the boy so mm-hmm. much. But when you have someone from the outside who comes in and sees a group session, and they always talk about how they've seen the boys grow. But it's like, you know, for me, it's like seeing my son. Now, since I see him every day, I can't necessarily see the growth that's taking place. But without a doubt, for people who come from the outside, when they look and listen to these boys talk, it's in all humility, it's impressive.
Yeah.
To see, you know, what the boys talk about through the mythological stories.
Is there any kind of, like, word of mouth? Are they excited about it? Tell their friends friends want to get in?
Oh yeah, no doubt. And as a matter of fact, it was a couple of years ago, with the boys, and I forgot the question that we asked them, you know, the specific question. But it centered around that, and the boys just gave examples about, I was telling my buddy, you know, the one myth, and he didn't want to hear, and then I kept telling him, and he said, next thing you know, it's time for us to go to sleep. And he's like, no, tell me the rest of the story. and we have, I say on the average, maybe once a week, I get a phone call or an email or somebody trying to get in a program. So, especially when we were in the schools, because the boys have their T-shirts, you know, we take good care of the boys. Their black T-shirts on the back says extracting the gold inherent in our youth. And then the red T-shirts, the back of them say becoming the hero within our own stories. And the white T-shirts, which takes you a while to get the white T-shirts, but on the back of those it says the stone will be found when the search lies heavy on the searcher. So, like, you know, they had the alchemy shirts, the alchemy bags, the alchemy hats, the drumming, you know, we do a lot of drumming. So it's obvious that it's, you know, it's a nice, tight group bond, and boys, you know, they looking for that.
Yeah, in a way, I imagine you're kind of creating a missing rite of initiation for these urban boys.
No doubt. And it's not just me. I got a heck of a staff.
Yeah.
You know, that works very close with me. And the one thing about the people who work with us, wow, just all of them, just wow, really, just really good hearts and really care about the boys. So I've been blessed. You know, another thing in myth, the hero never does it on his own. He always has, you know, assistance.
One of my students is exploring an interesting archetype that I've never heard reference to before. She's calling it the amicus, I think, the idea of the faithful sidekick who accompanies the hero on the journey. And there are lots of good examples of that, you know, like in Lord of the Rings and other stories.
I call it the mythological need for the other.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, you tell them stories and myths to the beat of an African drum. Perhaps there's one that you can maybe you could share one of your favorites here with us.
Okay, one of our favorites is the city where people are mended, and in this story, now we probably won't have time to go through the whole story, but I'll just tell you parts.
Okay.
Let me back up a little bit. When we tell the myth, we normally go in a certain order, and one of the first myths that we tell the boys, well, one of the first things we do with the boys is we apologize to the boys for our generation leaving them on their own, okay? And I mean, it's a sincere apology to them. Like for the boys we work with, I say 80% of them don't have the fathers in the homes. So one of the first things we do is apologize, and then we tell them this one myth, the beginning of the myth, and it's called The King and the Corpse. And in this myth, there's this mendicant, which is a holy man. In this particular myth, he's a beggar, but he's really a holy man. And he goes to the king's treasure, and every day for 10 years, he gives this king's treasure a piece of fruit. Now when I'm telling the story, you know, you got the beat of the drum going. And he does this every day. And the king his treasurer just casually tosses the fruit aside, but this does not discourage the mendicant. And he just, you know, calmly walks back into the crowd and returns home, and then he comes back the next day, hands the king's treasurer a piece of fruit, and this goes on every day for 10 years. And then one day, it happens, and then I'll tell the story. I always tell the boys, and it always happens on just one day. It just takes one day to change the rest of your life. And on this particular day, a monkey intercepts the fruit, and he starts to play with the fruit. And outside the fruit, inside of the fruit is a precious jewel, and the precious jewel falls out. And the king's treasurer, he sees that, as does the king. And the king asks the treasurer, what have you been doing with this fruit every day for 10 years? And he said, I've just been storing it in the storehouse. So then he goes back to the storehouse, and he sees the fruit lying there in the storehouse from the floor to the ceiling in various stages of decay. And we stop the story right there, and we always talk about the boys. We tell them that every day they're given a precious jewel, but it's disguised as fruit, and to stop throwing it away. So all the myths that we say, we'll always refer back to these myths, you know, from 5-6 years, we'll refer back to the myths, and we talk about precious jewels. So that's one of the first myths we do. Now, one of the other ones that we do from the very beginning, and the reason why we do this one, the water of life, is because in this myth, it talks about crying and getting off your horse and ask for assistance. So in this myth, the king is sick, and when the king is sick, the whole village is sick. And he has three sons, and the three sons, they're sitting on their father's steps, the castle steps, and they're crying. And this old man walks by, and he sees them crying, so he stops, and he says, why are you crying? And they said, we're crying because our father, the king, is sick. And so the old man tells him that he knows where a cure is. He said, but it's very difficult to get to. Well, the older son, he thinks that if he secures the water of life, he'll become his father's favorite and inherit his father's kingdom. So he asks his father, can he go in search of the water of life? And the father tells him, no, it's far too dangerous. But then the son, he doesn't give up, and the father relinquishes, as some fathers do. And the oldest son, he mounts his horse, and he's headed to find the water of life. And there's this dwarf standing on the right side of the road, and he said, where are you going in such a hurry? And the oldest boy says, none of your business, you little runt, get out of my way. So the dwarf casts a magic spell on the oldest son. You don't see him again. The second son does the same thing. Well, the third son, he's not thinking about anything about becoming his father's favorite or inherit the king. He just wants his father to be well. So he asks, can he go in search of the water of life? Same thing happens. Then, father finally relinquishes. So the youngest son mounts his horse, and he's headed to find the water of life. And the dwarf is standing out in the middle of the road, and he asks him, where are you going in such a hurry? At this point, I stop playing the drum, and I tell him that the youngest son, he gets off his horse, and he admits that he does not know where he's going. And then at that point, the dwarf thanks him for not being as arrogant and as rude as the older two brothers, and he gives him just about everything that he needs. And then I start back playing the drum, and then we'll stop the story at that point. Now, the reason why we tell that story first is because for urban youth, they keep up this persona of toughness. And,
yes.
And we let the boys know that in the story. Mm-hmm. If they would act like, if the three sons act like nothing was wrong, the old man wouldn't have stopped. So crying is important, okay? So you don't necessarily have to cry, but you have to let someone know when something is wrong. And then we also talked of the importance of getting off your horse, okay, and admitting that you don't know where you're going. So that's one of the first myths that we use. And the reason why, here again, is for them to admit that they need help.
That's fascinating.
Okay, so now let me get to one of our favorites, and then I'll let you get back to your next question.
Okay.
But the city where people are made, because the story I told you right there, we got from Mead's Boogeyman in the Water of Life, but that's a Grimm's fairy tale. But the city where people are mended, this is a beautiful, beautiful myth. And basically, these boys are out playing together. It's a group of them just playing together. And they go inside this tree, baobab tree, and a nemesis comes and he tells them that he will let them leave if they give him their bracelet and their clothing. So all the boys give up their bracelet and their clothing except for one. So he remains in the tree. And all the other boys go home. And then the mother of the missing boy, you know, says, where's my son? So they said, well, he's back, you know, in the tree. Well, she knows that there's a hole at the top of the tree, so she takes him some food. And she goes back to the tree and she says, son, you know, reach out your hand and I'll feed you. So he could tell that's the voice of his mother. So he reaches his hand out. Well, there's a hyena that's there and he overlooks the situation. So he goes and he says, son, reach out your hand. Well, the boy can tell that's not the voice of his mother. So the hyena goes to the blacksmith, tells the blacksmith, now keep in mind the drum is going, okay? Now the drum is a mesmerizing type thing, okay? The blacksmith tells the hyena that he can change his voice, but just make sure you do not eat anything on the way back. And so the hyena says, okay, well, on the way back, the hyena eats a centipede, so it screws his voice up. So the hyena gets mad at the blacksmith, and he is going to kill the blacksmith, and then he ends up, blacksmith says, hey, I'll give you another chance. And so he says, just make sure you don't eat anything. So the hyena goes back, and now his voice has changed. So the boy thinks that's his mother, so he reaches his arm up, and the hyena, with his strong jaws, he pulls the boy out. And then he eats the boy, and he just leaves the bones there. So the next day, the mother comes, and she sees the bones, and she puts the bones in a bag, and then she heads to the city where people are minted. So we stop it right there. Now, here again, you know, the boys, they go around, they write down what's, you know, what resonates with them in the story, and each one of them will say what resonated with me in the story was, okay, and they sit in a circle by age, youngest to oldest, so they'll go around and say, here again, no right or wrong answers. So, from that myth right there, from that component of the story right there, we'll talk about the importance of the hyena blaming someone else for something that he was told not to do. Okay.
Yeah.
So with youth, a lot of times they blame others. So we talk about that. We ask them, like the hyena had the boy in its grasp. We ask them, what has you in its grasp right now? Okay. Mm-hmm. What is pulling at you?
Mm-hmm.
But out of this one right here, we ask them, what are they putting in that bag to take to the city where people are mended? And so with each one, we'll ask them specifically, okay, what are you putting in the bag to take to the city where people are mended? And wow, just to hear the responses of the things that they're taking. Generally speaking, what the boys say is that they're taking the lack of relationship that they have with their father, or they're taking their parents' relationship, and they're putting in the bag. But a lot of times, what they're putting in that bag, it has to do with relationships.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
So, and I mean, that story goes on and on and on.
Yeah.
So that's one of our favorite. I mean, I got quite a few favorites.
Well, you're on a roll.
Thank you.
Yeah. Where could a person find that story, the city of people?
I will send that to you. Okay, I'll send that to you.
Okay.
I'll send that to you. I'll send you the city where people are mended. I'll send you a few of them with the questions and everything.
Okay. Hey, that's
okay.
Wonderful.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, these kids have been exposed to TV stories and movies, you know, saturated by the media, and yet these myths connect with them anyway, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, here again, it's something magical to see the boys. Just their engagement, you know, when you tell a story. You hear a pin drop. And I mean, these are urban youth. When earlier, you know, I said this is a ticket to reaching youth. When I told the high school dropouts the story about the water of life, and now I work with them for a year, and you know, this is when I was really first starting. So instead of it being my first story I told, it was like the last story I told. And now we have been with them for about a year, meeting like once a week, and they went around the circle and they took it upon themselves to talk about the last time they cried. Okay, and this is from the boy sitting on the steps.
Mm.
I was like, wow, this is the ticket. And another thing told me that myth was the ticket when I was working with the high school dropouts in Cleveland. And I would have about 33 of them at a time because the gentleman was trying to get his money's worth. So instead of giving me 12 at a time, he'd give me like 33 at a time. Now, these high school dropouts, okay?
Yeah.
So and I have for an hour and a half. So what I ended up doing was giving them, I told them they could do whatever they wanted to do the first 15 minutes. Give me an hour, they could do whatever they wanted to do the last 15 minutes. So the first 15 minutes is chaotic. And out of their 15 minutes of chaos, and this is their time, one boy hollered out, "Kwame, tell us another story." And I was just like, wow, this myth is the ticket.
Wow. Now, Kwame, that sounds like an African name. Is that a name that you adopted at some point?
Basically, when I went through, after I got initiated in that Akan, right in passage, Kwame was the name I was given. It was Saturday's child. I was born on a Saturday.
Okay.
Okay, so I legally changed my name to Kwame.
Okay. You know, this sounds like a program that really should, you know, should be spread across the land.
Yeah.
Do you have any ambitions to...
It's funny you would mention that. We've been approached for that. We've been approached, you know, to do that, but it's certain, I guess, parameters they want, and I guess, you know, we didn't quite fit that bill. So we're looking to you know, I think in the beginning of the conversation I told you how we're putting together a teacher's manual.
Yeah.
Now, we're starting to work pretty closely with the Joseph Campbell Foundation. Okay, so...
Good.
So we're looking to make this a national model, but we're just going to have to do it on our time and the way we want to do it. But this is definitely something that could be spread, and spread easily, because it's not that difficult. Basically, you give people the myths, and you give them the questions, especially someone with a counseling background. You know, it's really just about being able to facilitate the groups, you know, and just having.
I think Barack Obama needs to hear about this program somehow.
Yeah, he will.
Good.
Everything is going to happen within its due time.
Yeah, Barack and Oprah, they both need to hear about this because they have so much influence.
Yeah, it's funny you would mention that because those are two of the top people that we're going to address. So we're just waiting until it's the right moment.
Yes. Yes.
For the right timing. But as soon as we have everything, you know, in line, I want to, you know, get the PhD out the way. That's out the way. And we want to get the book published. But as soon as it's, you know, as soon as the timing is right and is ready to be unveiled, then it will. It will be. And we definitely plan to, you know, talk to both of them.
Yes.
Get the ear.
As an African-American man, I wonder if you'd be willing to share with us what it meant to you, or what it means to you, really, to have Barack Obama as our president.
Okay. and obviously, I'm not speaking for the, you know, entire black race, but
right.
but for me, I remember the night he was elected, and that we had some over my parents' house, and I don't know, it's about 40-something people, and you know, going back, we going full circle here, and you know, just. As a child, wow, just seeing all those negative images, okay, of blacks. And the first thing I thought about was that, you know, as a child, now we can't use that as an excuse, you know, the negative images. So that's the first thing that I thought about is that something as simple as having his picture, you know,
yeah.
In the schools, because it's about images, because images form your identity.
Yes.
Okay, so something as simple as just seeing that. So that's one piece there, just the image of a black man as a president. But also, we've and I you know, don't want to really make this generalization, but then again, we can no longer use color, you know, as an excuse. Now, granted, do you have certain situations where color still plays a factor? No doubt. But for the most part, you know, we can't use color as an excuse to where you can't overcome obstacles. So it was a great feeling. I just remember being on my parents' house, and you know, I cried at the drop of a hat. So that's really no big deal. But but I just remember, you know, the tears flowing, and
yeah.
and the first thing I was saying is how they used to, describe us as monkeys, you know,
and that's
what came to my mind. And that's what I just kept saying, you know, that night was why we came from that to being, you know, present.
Yeah, it's really been quite a journey, and I certainly had tears in my eyes around all of that inaugural ceremony and so on, and it is amazing because it's all happened within your lifetime and within my lifetime.
Yeah, and then not to put a damper on it, but like Malcolm said, don't stick a knife in my back 12 inches, pull it out 6, and tell me we're making progress. Okay.
Yeah,
making progress,
yeah.
No doubt. Okay.
Right. But it's not the end of the story. It's not the end of the struggle.
Yeah, but it's certainly, you know, something that will give you incentive to move on day to day. That's for certain.
There you go. That's a good place for us to wrap it up.
Okay.
Dr. Kwame Scruggs, thanks so much for being my guest today on Shrink.
Thank you. Thank you. And thank you for the work you're doing. Okay, that's impressive.
Well, thank you. I hope you are as inspired by this conversation with Dr. Kwame Scruggs as I am. Our culture is so lacking in appropriate initiation rites for youngsters. This seems to be especially important for young males, to have good role models who challenge them with appropriate teaching and even taxing tasks that build a sense of identity, capability, self-confidence, and achievement. As you heard me say in the interview, I think Kwame has created a model which could be used in communities all over, and not just in the U.S. either. And I like the fact that he's using these older, archetypally rooted stories rather than manufactured content. I believe that the myths contain seeds that speak to our deepest selves in a way that can't be consciously manufactured. You also heard my wish that President Obama and Oprah somehow become aware of this program. I think both would be interested and eager to support it. You heard Kwame say, all in good time. However, after the interview was over, he sent me an email asking me whether I have an in with either President Obama or Oprah. I had to confess that I don't, other than having the privilege of having interviewed several guests who have also been interviewed by Oprah. I'm sharing this with you now, just in case one or more of you listeners might have a way of getting to President Obama or Oprah with this information. It's a small world in terms of the networking connections that tie us all together, and it's not beyond imagination that one or more of you might have a way to get the information to these influential people. If you have the means, I encourage you to contact them or to pass your contact information along to Kwame. You can reach him through his website at www.alchemyinc.net, and Alchemy Inc. is spelled ALCHEMYINC. As a result of our interview, I'm also realizing that Michael Mead is someone who should be on our series, and Kwame has generously provided me with his contact info and the permission to use his name. So stay tuned for the manifestation of that wish.
You want to learn about the inside and what makes us tick? You could find all the answers you need real quick. Get on the couch with Dr. Dave. Leave your worries behind. It'll all be fine. It's Shrink Wrap Radio. It's all in your mind. For insight into personal growth and the inner life, here's Shrink Wrap Radio with Dr. Dave.
Well, the past couple of weeks have seen me getting interviewed several times. Ann Hill, who was my guest on Shrink Wrap Radio number 204 on Nightmares as a Tool for Personal Growth, has a radio show of her own in the picturesque and woodsy little town of Occidental near here. Her show is called Dream Talk Radio, and she interviewed me about the class I teach at Sonoma State University on myth, dream, and symbol. If you're interested, you can listen to the interview. I've put a link on the Shrink Wrap Radio site under the In the Media tab at the top of the page. Also, I was interviewed recently by therapist and shrink wrap radio listener Kirk Honda. He has a video podcast in which he interviews other therapists or explores issues of topical interest. You can get his podcast through iTunes in either video or audio format. Warning, though, if you've fallen in love with my voice, maybe you shouldn't see my face. As they say, I have a face made for radio. I know I'm experiencing some challenge being confronted by my aging visage. Also, I'm wishing I had positioned the camera differently so that I could look into it. The focus of the interview was on shrink wrap radio, how I got into podcasting in the first place, a couple of my favorite interviews, and some discussion about the HBO TV series In Treatment, among other things. If heedless of my warning, you'd like to see this video, there is a link to it, again, under the In the Media tab on my site. Or you can find the audio version in iTunes. And I'll play a promo for Kirk's Psychology in Seattle a bit later in the show. I was also interviewed by the BBC for a relatively new show called Americana on their audio channel 4, but it's not up yet. They were looking to interview a radio psychologist and found me on the internet. I'm not sure if they'll use my segment or not, because I think what they really wanted was someone who hosts one of these call-in shows on AM radio. I'll let you know if and when that interview goes live. Speaking of interviews, my latest on Wise Counsel podcast is an interview with Peter Breggin, MD, on the psychopharmaceutical complex. This is an interview that was suggested by one of my shrink wrap radio listeners, and Peter Breggin, who has been called the Ralph Nader of psychiatry, was very gracious. He's totally down on all psychotropic medications, and it's a very thought-provoking interview. I just learned about an application for smartphones like the iPhone and also the iTouch, which is not a phone, various BlackBerry models and other phones too, I imagine. The application is called Stitcher, and I believe it's also a desktop app. It allows you to stream radio stations and certain podcasts to either your desktop or your phone. So the big news is that I contacted them, and they've added both Shrink Wrap Radio and Wise Counsel to their lineup. So you can now stream the latest episodes to your phone or desktop through Stitcher. Yet another way to listen to Shrink Wrap Radio and Wise Counsel podcast. Speaking of iPhone apps, we have a new sponsor on our top links widget over on the right side of the page. The top link you'll find there is for an iPhone application called HypnoSage. I tried it out, and it does a good job of leading you through a hypnosis session. The content involves choosing a short-term goal and imagining all the steps, states, and benefits associated with making it happen. The music and the voice are very pleasing. Don't forget you can advertise your own product or service on our Top Links widget for a one-time PayPal payment of $20. You don't even have to contact me. There's a sign-up right at the bottom of the widget on the page. Remember, there's also an ad on the right side of our site for North of Eden. You'll recall my interview with Mark Bregman and Krista Lancaster on their archetypal approach to dreaming. If you click on the link on our site, it will take you to their offer of a free webinar, which helped me to understand their approach much better, and it is free, so check it out. Don't forget to join our Yahoo discussion group if you haven't done so already. There's a banner link on our website in the right-hand gutter, or you can simply send an email to shrinkwrapradio-subscribe@yahoogroups.com. I really want to thank all of you who have been able to make either a one-time or continuing PayPal or credit donation by clicking on the big green donate button on our site. And thank you also for your patronage of our sponsors using the discount links on our site for GoDaddy, PetMeds.com, Brookstone, Budget Car Rentals, Angie's List, and Avis Car Rentals.
Hello, Shrink Wrap Radio.
Hello to all the fans of Dr. Dave.
Hello to all the fans of psychology podcasts.
My name is Kirk Honda.
And my name is Lita Ballas.
And we have a podcast called
Psychology in Seattle.
The podcast is about psychology and Seattle.
Well, duh. It's called Psychology in Seattle. What else would it be about?
Well, we did have that episode about barbecue sandwiches.
Oh, yeah.
At any rate, I am a licensed therapist here in Seattle.
And I am not.
And together, we have episodes about barbecue sandwiches, art therapy, weight loss, bipolar, sexual addiction, birth order, dance movement therapy, bondage, sand play therapy, polyamory, video game addiction, marital therapy, Burning Man, parenting, the TV show Dexter, depression, and Darth Vader. Oh, and we have an episode with Dr. Dave.
And don't forget about our episode on Britney Spears.
Right. I would never forget the episode about Britney.
Oops, I did it again. I played with your heart.
Well, you can find us at psychologyinseattle.com, and you can subscribe to our audio and video podcasts on iTunes. Give us a listen, all you shrink wrap radio people. Thanks for listening, and take care.
You see, I don't know the melody for the. Why don't you sing it?
I don't know the verse. Oh. I didn't even know those words.
Got lost in.
Yes, do check out Psychology in Seattle. Now let's catch up on some listener email. I'm running a bit long again, so I'll only read a few. Hi, Dr. Dave. First of all, you're doing such an excellent job in making your podcast easy and accessible while being extremely informative and entertaining. I was first drawn to your show when I was trying to sort out my life after graduation, and she puts in parentheses, typical. The post-graduation period really proves to be emotionally taxing, and I was at a point where I doubted everything I knew and learned. I graduated with a degree in visual arts, but have since been completely blocked artistically, as my university education had taken all my creativity and has converted it to academic analysis and theory. I have never particularly been drawn to psychology until it came time for me to really consider what interested me in my life. Your show has made me aware of the inner energy I possess and has taught me how to listen to my body and instincts. Well, that's wonderful. I especially enjoyed your interviews with Sarah Hannah Radcliffe. It helped me open up not only to new ideas, but most importantly, to myself. I've done quite a bit of looking into holistic psychology and was wondering if you would be able to give me some insight into educational paths I could take. I found a holistic psychology master's program at JFK University in the San Francisco Bay Area, but was wondering if you would recommend going down the quotes, traditional psychology route before jumping into a specialization such as holistic studies. Do you know of any websites or resources that I could consult? Thank you so much in advance. Cheers. And that's from Hera, who... is from Vancouver, British Columbia, but at the time that she wrote this, is in France. And, you know, that's a question that I've heard from other people from time to time, certainly one that comes up. And I wrote back to Hera, and let me share a little bit of what I wrote to her in case anybody else can benefit from it. I'm under the impression that the program at JFK is a good one, although I've had no direct contact with them. But I have known students who graduated from it and who are quite happy, and I've sort of casually met a couple of the faculty, and I was impressed by them. Now, whether you should go traditional or non-traditional depends on a number of factors. If you ever think you want to teach at a mainline university, then you should definitely go traditional and fill in with your special interests later. Major universities, even minor universities, they really want people to be well-trained in traditional approaches because they are mostly traditional themselves. Do you have the goal of becoming a licensed therapist or counselor of some sort? If so, you want to be sure you apply to a school or program that can prepare you for licensure in the state in which you hope to practice. On the other hand, it sounds like you're in a place where you're really wanting to follow your heart, so perhaps that's the best choice. So that's what I wrote to Hera. Next, we hear all the way from Panama. Hi, Dr. Dave. I'm writing you from Panama, Republic of Panama. I've become a fan of Shrink Wrap Radio since the beginning of May. Since then, I listen to from one to two shows every day. I find them fascinating and very helpful as a wisdom source in the process of learning to cope with life. I'm writing to you as a journalist to ask your permission to use one show as a source for an article for a local newspaper. I'm not a psychologist, and I would write the article as a third person describing the conversation between you and your guest, and of course quoting and stating how to find the original information at your website. I think that people over here and everywhere need this kind of information. I would like to contribute with that. Please tell me what you think about that. And that comes from Monica in Panama. And of course, I was happy to give Monica that permission and encouragement. So wonderful to hear from her and to know that the show is being enjoyed down in Panama. And I sent her an email asking her which episode she was talking about. She wrote back and said, "Hi, Dr. Dave. I've been delighted myself with many of your interviews, but the one that I found the most enriching and wonderful was the Happiness Hypothesis, number 142. This is the last one I heard since I've been listening from the oldest to the newest. I found fascinating the concept of the happiness coming from between and all the references to your guests made about ancient wisdom, the elephant allegory, for example." Yes, that's one of my favorite interviews as well. And she goes on to say, "I will keep you informed about the publication of the article. Thanks for writing, Monica." Monica, I hope you're listening. I haven't heard about that article. Hope you wrote it and that it got accepted in any event. And the next one reads, the next one comes from Lonnie and reads, "Hey, Dr. Dave, I heard your 200th episode and was impressed. I have a great deal of respect for your willingness to integrate the feedback you receive. I am so grateful for your podcasts. You truly are doing a great service for the mental health community. Take care, Lonnie." And in part, I think she was responding to the fact that that episode touched on gay issues. And if I recall correctly, she had written me previously suggesting that there was scant coverage on that. So I was responding to her suggestion. The next one reads, "Dear Dr. Dave, I've been listening for quite a while now and am almost caught up. I'm something of a completist, read obsessive, so I had to listen to every show. Only three more to go now, so I should be caught up by today or tomorrow. I love the show, and I've learned so many fascinating things. I donate, but, well, let's just say I've had a great deal of time to listen to podcasts in the last month or so." I guess that means unemployment, eh? And a lot of free time. Well, just the fact that you're listening is support, and I really appreciate that. And she goes on to say, "A topic that I'd like to know more about is the role of dragons in the human mind, you know, as a symbol or archetype. So many cultures have something that could be called a dragon, from Quetzalcoatl to the European dragon. So it seems that dragons have a rather powerful hold on the human psyche. This may make an interesting show. Or if I'm the only one interested in it, perhaps you could direct me to some reading material. Anyway, I love your show. Keep up the great work. Laura." You know, I don't have any resources for Laura off the top of my head. Write to me if you know of some good resources that I could refer her to. And be sure to include Laura's name, which will help me to find this email if and when you contact me with those suggestions. But I'm sure that the Jungian perspective would have a lot to say about dragons. So I think that better wrap it up for today. Remember to send your emails to shrink@shrinkwrapradio.com. In addition to emails, you can leave comments about individual shows in the comments area on the site. You can leave voicemails on Skype, where our name is ShrinkPod. Or you're encouraged to leave voice messages using the MyChingo button on the site. And in the U.S., you can leave voicemail on our phone at 206-337-0622. Thanks to my guest, Kwame Scruggs, for sharing his archetypal work with inner-city youth. I think I mentioned in my commentary that I would like to do a follow-up interview with Michael Mead, who's been such a major influence on Kwame. I'm happy to announce that, in fact, my next episode will be with Michael Mead, discussing his double CD set on Finding the Light Inside Dark Times and his latest book, The World Behind the World. Believe me, this is one you won't want to miss. Please stay tuned for a couple of brief sponsor announcements. Until next time, this is Dr. Dave saying, It's all in your mind. There's a new limited time GoDaddy discount offer that I want to tell you about. You already know that GoDaddy is the go-to place for web hosting. Well, from July 15th through August 31st, 2009, you can use my special discount code of SHRINK20H. And that's with a capital S and a capital H. So it's SHRNK20H with the S and the H capitalized. And what you get for using this is 20% off for either a 1 year, 2 year, or 3 year web hosting package. So once again, the discount code is SHRINK20H. Please help support Shrink Wrap Radio by shopping at brookstone.com and saving yourself 10% in the process with our special discount code of SHOWRAP. That's spelled SHOWRAP. Brookstone.com has a terrific range of unique products that are distinctive in design and quality. Brookstone.com is the place, and SHOWRAP is the discount code.